like to note that this is a continuation of our budget work session. We had an executive session to deal with labor issues and personnel issues, and we're now moving to the open session. Because it's a work session, there will be no votes by this group, and the committee will only be discussing things that are being brought before us. We're going to continue our efforts to see how we can balance this budget as effectively as possible with minimum impact on the public. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you said, this is a continuous process, and today we want to just take the board through some recommendations that we have and go through what's called a budget crosswalk that looks at the gap between the expenses that we identified in order to run the level of service that we operate today and how we intend to minimize that gap. Some of the recommendations that we would give you will be a very low risk, and we have a high confidence level that all of these can occur, but there are some risks involved in it, and we will go through that process. In addition, we've put together for the first time some possibilities of recommended service adjustments that could occur that would have minimal impact on our customers, and we looked at it from the perspective of not removing any services that would deny an individual who currently has the ability to go from point A to point B now, eliminating that ability in the future. Instead, we looked at the aspects which we would get into detail about services that are duplicated, some headway adjustments, and some other adjustments that we can make. But I'm going to ask Carol Kissel to go through the process with you, and then we can have the discussion.
Thank you. On the first page, you see the crosswalk. On the far right, the budget gap of $154 million. And as a result of the $81 million administrative cost reductions that the general manager is making, we have the $73 million budget gap. After last week, we've actually looked at some areas that we may be able to reduce expenses, and we wanted to go through those with you. One of the items, number one, is fiber optic revenue. We actually, after another look, realized that we might have an additional forecast that would increase the fiber optic revenue, additional $1.2 million. We feel that's a low risk and feel pretty confident that we'd be able to attain that. We took the board direction last week and removed the $5 million that we had on the GASB 45 and took the recommendation that we would only have $1 million to fund the structure of that health liability item. And as a result of that, that took down this number to $4 million. We also looked at our purchase services amount, which, as you recall, last week we were on a trend over the past few years at spending at $60 million a year. We had a big increase projected for FY 2010 in anticipation of maintenance and hardware costs that we would have under information technology as a result of purchased new technology and systems to upgrade some of the antiquated systems that we had. We did not reduce that, but we did scrub some of the other purchase services budgets and were able to feel confident that we can take $5 million of expense down for that. In addition, we took some of the direction that was discussed last week. As you recall, under preventive maintenance, the grant program, federal FTA grants, we actually use $20.7 million a year that we fund from and move from capital to operating to cover preventative maintenance type of expenses. We took the board direction to increase that by an additional $10 million. That actually would impact the capital funding over time, and increasing that to 30.7 would increase it by $10 million, and over a 10-year period, that would be a $100 million impact to capital. To some extent, we feel that that is sustainable, but there is an impact to capital. Under the bus revenue paper transfer, we also took direction to increase the paper transfer by an additional $5 million. in anticipated revenue, although we don't have trend data for that, as we had indicated last week. To some extent, it's a high risk, but we actually have put this number here, and we'll report back to the board in April, I believe, once we have trend data that's comparable, that we can feel more confident that we can achieve this level. Personnel cost assumption change. This actually is a change that we actually made relative to our pension liabilities that we currently have. As you know, those have been we have extreme losses, as do other jurisdictions. We actually are looking at doing a smoothing of those liabilities consistent with the other regional states. Virginia, the District, and Maryland smooth their pension liabilities over a 5-year period. We currently do that over a 3-year period. If we're recommending we smooth over a 5-year period, that would save an additional $7 million in expense for the current budget. On the wage settlement piece, we actually had some discussions and feel that given some of the discussions that we had and the current union agreements that we have, we were able to actually come up with a $12 million reduction in salary expenses. We feel that this, to some extent, is a bit of a risk, but we'll know more as we go through the following several months. As a result of that, we were able to reduce the level from $73 million to a more sustainable, with a level of risk associated with each one of these items, to a level of $28.8 million of a budget gap. The adjustments that we're not recommending at this time, since we feel that this stretches the budget more than can be managed, would be in the areas of reduced funding for claims. We have pending claims and forecasting that we actually would be risking moving that forecast, so we're not recommending any change to that. We have discussions last week about downsizing some functions relative to cash collection in the agency, and we recommend that those changes will occur, but we would not realize any savings for that in 2010 because they would be implemented next year. Presumably, they would be savings that we would be ready to reveal, but not until 2011. And then on the Metro Access federal minimums, we're not recommending any change at this time until we get more information on the peer review that's occurring in March, and then we can take another look at that in April. In addition, we have the well, let me stop here in case there's any questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Yule.
Going back to the $7 million, the personnel cost assumption change, it certainly don't disagree that the opportunity to spread it out or stretch it from 3 years to 5 years is certainly the right direction to go. Question I have is, does this take into consideration making adjustments to pension funding in lieu of the market adjustments, the reduced value / appreciation on investments?
The $7 million actually takes that into consideration. It's the number that we received from our actuaries. So as a result of the smoothing, it takes that the future losses into consideration. What we may be able to realize later on, and we haven't actually assumed what those savings are, is the ability to consolidate a lot of the investment policies. As you know, we have four trusts. And because we have four trusts, we have managers for each trust. We have different investment guideline policies. To the extent that we can actually consolidate that, it would minimize a lot of reduction in cost, and you would have a bigger pool to invest and diversify. And as a result, I think that would make those losses even lower. But that would be more of a 2011 impact.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I'll just end this portion of it that there, as you see on the right, there is a level of risk and sustainability that we've identified with each one of these areas. As you know, we are recommending them, but there are risks to each one of them, and we will report back to the extent we can once we understand the second half of this year where we're coming in on some of those revenue items. On terms
before,
of
before you continue, so the summary at this point is that we have taken the $81 million that was the subsidy number that we were looking at as potentially subject to service adjustments, and we moved that down to 29 million at this point. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then now we're going to start talking about potential service adjustments?
That's correct.
Okay. Question. Mr. Zimmerman.
To go back up the line, though, you're starting from 154. The first big take is $81 million in administrative cuts.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, two things there. One, we had asked about the potential impact on service of those administrative cuts, and I don't know that we'd heard back on that. And secondly, we then made it worse by making you take another $22 million than the last meeting, which, you know, I assume that something that has to be found somewhere. We told you to find it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where that extra $22 million is coming from, but it sort of raises the question that I think Mr. Graham and I had raised a few weeks ago more, because, you know, if it turns out administrative includes things like street supervisors for bus or something like that, then there is a potential impact on the actual service, or at least the quality of the service, and I think we need to know what that is.
I can give you some overview of that, and again, we have more specific detail. Of the reductions, large number of the administrative staff that are involved in that are non-service related. However, there were some positions that have been budgeted on the service side that deals with some technicians and others for projects that we wanted to do in FY09 that will not occur. This budget assumes that we're going to make a dramatic reduction in overtime, which we are doing now. For the first time, we are, for this pay period, this period of time, we're below budget on overtime, excluding the inauguration. And we intend to stay with that. And it also means we have to rapidly fill positions like mechanics and operators, and so we have to have an expedited process. There's a real balance here that we're talking about managing, and there are some risks to it, but based upon what I've seen happen in the last quarter, I'm confident that we can do it. On the street supervisor side, there were some vacant positions that have not been filled prior to the reorganization of bus operations, and those positions are in the mix. So there are positions that have not been filled in that position. So we're not taking people away.
Yeah, but
we're not adding.
I understand. That's a great relief to people who aren't losing their jobs because
right.
They didn't have those jobs anyway. But that doesn't do anything for the customer. And
right.
The point is that the reason we put those in was to address specific service problems we have. That was the solution a year ago. We didn't fill those for the budgetary reasons, I understand. And now you're saying we're just not going to fill them at all, which means there is a service quality impact
yes.
below what we had approved to have done a year ago. And we need a specific, I want to see that spelled out.
Okay.
And I understand that the determination may be that that's unavoidable in our circumstances, but I want to be explicit about what it is done. That is a reduction in the quality of service that we intended to provide a year ago.
Yes.
We're already taking that hit.
Yes.
Mr. Zimmerman, I wanted to clarify just that the $22 million that got subtracted last time did in fact come out of administrative, or it was, if you remember, that was the budget error issue, and they did reduce theirs. It did not come out of service at that time. We stayed at 73.
They did because we told them to do that.
No. That was something they said they wanted to do because they had a budget error at that time. And Mr. Graham.
Oh, you're saying they didn't change that number, basically.
Right.
They were
at 103. They dropped down to 81 with a $22 million that they applied themselves because of, as you remember, an error in the way the budget was put together. So it had no impact on the service
yes,
at all.
I see your point.
We kept the 73.
But my concern was only that in whatever they had to do to meet that, if that was changing what they were going to do in administrative
action. Yeah. What they're saying is that, or what they told us last week was, no, that had no effect. It was purely because of the way the spreadsheet was working.
Yes.
Mr. Graham.
Yeah, I when, you know, the two requests that I had made, which was for the impact on service of the FTE reduction and the analysis of top-level staff, when are we going to, I'd like something more formal.
We have that, and we have it to mail out for the meeting next week. We have it.
You have it?
Yes.
Okay, could you distribute it to us as soon as possible, then?
Yes.
Because I think we're now in the decision-making process here, and I'd like to have that information.
Okay.
to go forward.
Anybody else?
Yes, Mr. Benjamin. Quick one.
Mr. Brown.
On the risk column, did you use the guidelines of the rating agencies to define what level of risk to use, or did you create another?
No, we didn't do that. That would be a good one, but it's more financial criteria. The risk category that we looked at was how achievable are these things from a management implementation point of view. And because we have already taken the $81 million, as we just discussed, and that would impact some levels of hidden service, if you will, I think that we felt that some areas that were high risk would just really be towards implementation, and some would be just on data that we don't have. So that's why I mentioned that as we go forward over the next couple of months, we'll be reporting out more accurately how that's going to impact. Maybe those ratings might be go lower, some might go higher.
Shall we continue to your next section?
Yes, the recommended service adjustments, and I've actually used this one page as the talking points. The pages behind it just kind of go through what I just spoke about. So if you want to turn to page 11. The recommended service changes that we have here fall under three categories, broad categories, eliminating duplicate bus service, widening the headways on the bus and the rail, and closing station mezzanines. And we have in the appendix a level of detail that you can look at, and costs are attributed to each one of those functions.
Again, it's as I mentioned earlier, and we're going to go into any detail the board would like to go into. The direction was to look at any service reductions would not completely eliminate a transit option for people who have transit options today, which means that you might eliminate a line or segment of a line, but the individuals still have the option to get from point A to point B. A good example would be, even though we're not recommending that, for an example, there are services from Union Station over to the transportation department area in Southeast Washington. And if we were to eliminate that and that went away, there would be a cost savings, but any of our customers wanting to get from Union Station to that area still have several options to get there. So we're not taking away their total options, but we're taking away some convenience. In addition, we looked at headways and looked at the productivity on certain bus routes during certain times of the day, and looked at if we increase the headways, let's say an example, from 5 minutes to 8 minutes, how would that impact our customers? It would have a longer wait between buses, but the service and the capacity to carry the existing and projected ridership increases would still be in place. On the rail side, we looked at it from weekend service and evening services of increasing the headways from 12 minutes to 15 minutes during the off-peak hours. And you could still have the capacity, but there's a three-minute addition of a headway gap, so to speak. In addition, we looked at different stations. For an example, Gallery has three different entries and exits. But on weekends, they're underutilized. And so our recommendation would be at certain locations that we would close one of the entries or exits during off-peak and weekend hours, still having the abilities for our customers to enter those stations, but limiting the number of options that they would have, and that reduces a cost from the standpoint of staffing. One station in particular that I believe that we have looked at and helped me with this is Judiciary Square. And
give you an example, and it's Anacostia is our lowest mezzanine on both Saturday and Sunday. It is the north lot. It's the one in the parking lot that is not utilized, so the station has two mezzanines that we man for the entire time we open, from 8 a.m. till 3 a.m. the following morning on a Saturday. On a Saturday, we carry 150 people through that mezzanine all day long, Sunday, that number's 96. That's an example. That one's on the list for both Saturday and Sunday. Can you use specific numbers from again?
Have you finished all that? Let me ask before we start going into details about specific routes. I would note that this is the very first time any board member has seen this list, and this list is not in any way endorsed by any jurisdiction or by any board member.
Yes.
We have our choice now of either getting into details and starting to go through each and every item and try and figure out what we want to do about them, or leaving a number of these for us to be able to consult with the experts in each one of our jurisdictions, discuss all of that with them, and come back with alternative proposals. So, yeah, Ed, I'd like to get some comments quickly from the board about that, Mr. Graham.
I have a more general question. I don't want to dive into this for us right yet. And I agree with what you've said about getting jurisdictional advice on these things. I just want to understand a little bit better how the subsidy savings operate. Mm-hmm. Because we find that column as to the Metro Bus headway, and we find it as to the Metro Bus duplicate service elimination. Mm-hmm. When you use the term subsidy savings, mm-hmm. should we interpret this to be a subsidy credit, which is in many cases equivalent to the cost reduction, but in some cases the cost reduction is higher than the subsidy savings. Mm-hmm. So I just want to understand, is this monies back to the signatories, or is this something else?
No, this is actually, when we use subsidy savings, we're saying that if on the first page, the crosswalk, we had a subsidy with the gap that was 689. When our goal is to get down to a subsidy that's 535, which is consistent with the goal and the direction that the board has given us to get to a consistent subsidy level, the same as this year for the budget. So it is not a credit. It's just getting down to the same level of baseline subsidy that we have this year.
But Mr. Graham does point out an important issue, which is, although you may be caring about the average subsidy, we individually care about the subsidy for our jurisdiction. So one of the things that needs to be done here is, first of all, given the proposals that you make, some of those routes are regional routes, some of those routes are non-regional. What are the savings that each jurisdiction would accrue above and beyond everything else we've identified? And then with the $7.4 million that are left, if each one of us did it out of our own bus services, how much would we have to get to in order to get down to zero? Those are two pieces of information we don't have that if we're going to do anything more, we really need to have.
Well,
and I think if I could just reclaim my time. I think part of this is a terminology issue, actually, which I'm trying to get at here. I think subsidy savings is not the right term, because it's subsidy savings in the sense of additional subsidies that you would be seeking, but we have not agreed to give.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
In fact, we've sent a very clear message we're not willing to consider.
Right.
And so the term, I think, is going to confuse people. And with the understanding you've now given to it, which I also now understand, I think we need a new terminology.
I agree.
Mr. Zimmerman?
I'm not sure I understand all that, but it seems to me that I saw a different problem. If you look at a cut on the rail side and you say subsidy savings in the sense that it reduces that number you're trying to get down to, that plays out through a formula in a known way. So we know what that means in aggregate, and we know what it means for each individual jurisdiction. Whatever the saving is on the rail side. When you have a list of bus things, that aggregate number doesn't really tell you as much because it affects each jurisdiction differentially. And, you know, the reduction in service on a bus route in the District of Columbia does not have the same effect on the budget of Maryland or of the city of Alexandria as it does on the district. It doesn't affect their subsidies equally because the bus formulas are different and they're, you know, route specific. So if you're cutting their route, you're mostly cutting their subsidy. And that's a whole different thing, which puts a different color on the exercise in taking savings you know, out. It may help you when you're adding up a list to try and get to some total, but it's not really the same decision. It's the same subject for decision for us. I mean, it doesn't really help us get to a solution that way. We need to know how it affects the individual jurisdictions.
Right. All of this is going to be broken down jurisdiction by jurisdiction for us to be able to see how we individually get to what we can afford to pay next year.
And like I say, you know, I understand if you don't want to get into the details of this, that's okay with me, but somehow we have to get to them. And not only did we not see this, but our jurisdictional staffs haven't seen this either.
Right.
And at some point, I'd like to know, I mean, I heard the rationale, but I'm just looking over this, and some of this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So we have a lot of work to do.
Can I make two comments?
I agree. Go ahead.
Just one comment. I agree with you. Our criteria, obviously, was trying to develop something that would have the most minimal impact to the customer. I understand that was the criteria that we used, not a subsidy criteria. The second point is all of these items that you see here in C, which is a recommended service adjustments, are part of a broader model that we have actually provided to each one of the JCC members. So they're in the jurisdiction impact is in those model that they already have. But we can send it out again.
I haven't heard before here mm-hmm. in a long time. Duplicate bus service, which I don't believe we have any of, and I don't believe you've shown any. But
the term is an improper term. I agree with you.
Mr. McKay.
Well, I was going to make the same comment about the duplicate bus service, but I guess a technical question on the cuts that have been made to the duplicate bus service. Have we assumed that all of those riders are not going to go get on one of the other duplicate bus services? Is that how have we come up with the revenue loss figure? What percent of riders did we assume would be lost somehow versus get on to one of the other routes?
It actually varies by each of the route. Depends upon the first one on there is the 60 line, and the 60 line is partially covered by the 64. So which portion is not covered, and those people would not have service. So that's a percentage of the 60 line. And then we generally assume that 90% of the rest of the people would switch to the other route that's also their alternative.
Okay. So in any of these, is there a capacity problem where we're not achieving full ridership? I mean, have you backed that out, or are any of these duplicate routes where you're relying on some other route to take these folks? We've looked at the capacity of all of those, and in no cases do we bump the capacity.
We looked at the service that remains and the capacity that's out there, and there is enough capacity to carry them. All those buses will be more crowded. There'll be more standees on them. Instead of having 5 standees on each bus, they'll have 12 standees on each bus, 14 standees on each bus, still below what the bus is capable of carrying. And from the service quality, also we deal with it. If there's an issue out there and buses run late, you get more credit, but there is enough capacity.
Okay. And my second question is with the headway widening. If I am reading this chart correctly, you're showing no revenue loss in any of these categories, which means that none of these headway widenings exceed 5 minutes.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All typically
without regard to peak or off-peak, just none of them exceed 5 minutes.
We'd have to go back and check the one off-peak that's in there, and probably have it here. It may be greater than 5, but there's enough capacity on the remaining service to carry the load that's out there.
Okay, so just to be clear from a customer standpoint, if you're a rider and this was implemented, in no case would there be more than 5 minute gap from what they experience today.
That's
it's subject to traffic and other things, I understand, but generically speaking, there'd be in no case more than a 5 minute headway gap greater than what they experience today.
Yes, but I just put a caveat on the H6 and the off peak. I have to check that one. None of the peak ones are greater than 5 minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Linden.
I will just raise the issue. I'm trying to find question of duplicate bus service was raised. I'm trying to find out what the definition is, how we defined it. Case in point, I know in Philadelphia we always had the C bus route running full length of Broad Street when we had the subway underneath it. Or the jurisdictions where you may have ride on running service route that is bus service, that's the service that we have. I'm trying to get a sense of what constitutes a duplicate bus.
I guess I'll try to answer, and I agree with the statement that's earlier. Duplicate is the wrong word to use, but there are services that run along the same street. So on Connecticut Avenue, there are a number of routes that run on there. The example on here is a 7 and 8 plus other routes. A customer can go to the same stop they go today, catch a bus and one bus, and go to the same stop they get off to today. And so that their commuting path hasn't changed. The frequency's changed, and so they can still go and make the same trip they're doing today. They don't have to transfer, they don't take another carrier. That's why the revenue loss is zero in some of those columns. Because some people will go do that. And so for this page, that's sort of the definition of duplicate service.
Good. Mr. Graham.
Let me proceed to expand the menu a little bit here. And again, I raise these issues only for the purposes of additional information, which I would request from management. First, we need to have information on the impact of the federal stimulus for preventative maintenance and how that might be relevant to this budget. And let me just mention all of them, and then you can take any piece of this that you would like, but I think we need information on that. We need information. If we limit metro access only to meet the federal requirements, what kind of contribution would that make? I need to have information on parking fees. And we have done an analysis of the parking lots, and we find out that really, our analysis indicates that something on the order of 90% of our parking lots are full by 8 a.m. or by 8:30 a.m. So there's a question relating to that. We know that there's some elasticity problems that we've uncovered, which do account for some loss of revenue from what we had projected. But we have free weekend parking at this point. There are various issues relating to the free weekend parking. But what would be the revenue to the authority if we were to charge a relatively small amount for the weekend parking? I'm just going to go through the whole list so that we can get them on the table. The board is aware of the fact that we have had some initiatives in the past on retail within the metro stations. I think this has not been explored to the extent that I thought it was going to be explored. I'm still seeking information on what happened to the 07 competition in terms of applications that did not involve any food service at all. But I think that we need to look at what revenues we could anticipate if we really did have retail within our stations and what restrictions we might have on that retail in terms of food and other commerce. And finally, the additional advertising. The flat screens and the projected ads and so on. I don't know a great many people who like advertising, but again, now that we're in really a crisis situation in terms of our budget for 10 and our budget for 11, you know, I think we have to have an additional look at this. So these five items I would like added to the menu that you have presented, at least insofar as information and analysis of budget and revenue on these items.
Mr. Chair, if I might, just on one of the items, and we will still get you the detail, on the federal stimulus package, which is capital dollars, we did not roll that into the factor on preventative maintenance because it is a one-time fix, so to speak. It's slightly over $200 million over a two-year period of time. What we did, we looked at the regular capital budget, the monies that we get on an annual basis, because whatever adjustments we make, the adjustments have to continue throughout the next, beyond, as long as we're doing these budgets for right now until we find some other funding source. So we assumed that it would be a 10-year shift, and the stimulus package is only a two-year, so we didn't even look at that in the equation itself. We can look at it, but that's all capital dollars.
I mentioned specifically the preventative maintenance issue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been over this issue before, but I know I and others have repeatedly asked for some information on this. The fact that it's excluded entirely from this presentation concerns me, and I'd like to see, I'd like to at least have the options before
yes.
us,
okay.
and then we can make that decision. But if we don't get the information, we don't have any options.
Okay, are there any other comments? It sounds to me as though where we are is we have at least 7 requests from Mr. Graham for additional information that we need to put together. We have requested several times that what we need is what the effects of the proposals you are making so far have on our individual jurisdictional subsidies so that we know what the starting point is. And then if all additional cuts, the additional 7.4 million, were to come from jurisdictional bus, what would have to be the distribution in each jurisdiction to get us back to zero? Now, you know, we can then decide whether we want to do that or don't do that, but that's a pretty substantial piece of work, and I don't think any of us is prepared to do it here or now, and I don't think you've got the numbers to get us started anyway. I did want to repeat again that this set of proposals mm-hmm. are proposals that have not been vetted by the local jurisdictions. They have not been agreed to by local jurisdictions. They have not been even seen by the board members until just this minute, and so they are not at this point real in any sense of the word, even for going to public hearing. So at this stage, all we're talking about is preliminary proposals from the staff to the board that need substantial review. And I guess the question I have for the board is, there clearly is some degree of service adjustment that we may need to make, and some of that probably will have to go to public hearing, which puts us in a situation where relatively soon we have to decide what that is. In order to know some of those numbers, we have to get the answers to some of Mr. Graham's questions. And all of us have got to get the rest of the numbers and work with the stuff that's here. Are we talking about getting back together with proposals back to the staff or the things that we can put on the table 1 week from now, 2 weeks from now, 1 month from now?
From a timing,
we've got to decide whether we like what he's done so far.
He's going to do what we tell him to do.
Well, between doing what you tell me to do, which I will do, this board directs me. From a time standpoint, the more that we can accomplish by next week, because of the timing of holding a public hearing and making the changes before July 1, we would prefer the sooner the better. A month would delay the whole process and would change the calculations that we assumed from the savings. So the next week, or maximum if you have a special hearing in 2 weeks, but that's max.
May I just restate your question in a different way to get that answer? When you made your proposals to us, what was your assumed public hearing dates that you wanted to go out?
Week of March 16th?
Third and fourth week of March.
Which would require board approval by?
February 26th.
Which is
so
next week.
That
would allow us, in order for them to stay on that schedule, we would have to do
next.
What each jurisdiction wants to review of this, at least, within 1 week. Is that reasonable?
Yeah.
Mr. Zimmerman, you wanted to say something.
Well, I was wondering a little bit about the back end of the third and fourth week of March, and you know why we're tied to that. But I don't know. I guess if you're asking, you know, week we have to decide whether something like what's here is going to be put out to hearing. I mean, that's essentially what you're saying.
I think that's the request from the general manager to keep to the schedule that he has created.
I mean, I can tell you right now that you know, if I'm forced to respond to this. This is a problem, and you know I can't even understand the rationale for some of what I see here. And my number one consideration is I don't want to do anything that's going to damage the service. I mean, we've spent so much time building something up. There's confidence in the public in something we have here, and what I hear, the very talk, the very language that we've already slipped into in this agency, apparently, duplicate service. I mean, when you have a full train and a full bus running above the ground on it, you don't have duplicate service. And this is the slippery slope. This is exactly how public transportation declined in America for half a century. you start pedaling away, you say, well, they could take that same trip. There's actually another way to do it, you know, and you take a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, and gradually people say, what the heck am I doing this for? And they drive. And, you know, for all the reasons we were concerned in previous years, on the bus side in particular, about the impact of those who, in fact, don't have choices, the idea that we're going to go in this and then another $7 million, you know, in damaging the bus service, I got to say, you know, I'm not for that. And so if I have to pick in a week, I'm going to say no. I'm not willing to do that.
And I think your concern is one that we all have. None of us wants to do anything that would reduce service. And I presume that the staff is in exactly the same situation. So we either have to look at what service we would be willing to consider, or we have to come up with an alternative proposal for $29 million worth of additional savings. And that's where we are. Ms. Hutchins, again?
My concern of next week is that we have just, let's say today, we have additional information. We've just come to the point of what we see the envelope of the budget might be. And it isn't all-inclusive now. And so if we're going to set a public hearing date and we want to be the ones that are engaged as to what goes out to the public, then we have driven this train a little bit in the wrong direction. Because I would think the public hearing date should be the starting point of where at least the general manager would be, so that is wide enough for us to make those adjustments that we believe should occur. And his would be predicated on his data, and we would simply refine that data. We've kind of gone the opposite. It seems like the general managers compressed these, and now we have to make the envelope bigger. And I think we have to say for our own benefit, when do we stop collecting the data, and when do we then go out to public hearing?
Okay, Mr. Linton.
Chairman, I don't know if it's, you know, my comment probably is duplicate of yours in that, you know, I share Mr. Zimmerman's concerns about the old slippery slope, but I also recognize that at budget constraints, you have to make tough choices.
I wouldn't make these.
Yeah, but the choice that we have, quite frankly, is whether or not we're going to have increased subsidies. We'll find some other way within the budget, make our budget balanced. Manager is trying to do that, but if any of us have a else that allow us to not go down that slippery slope that allows us to continue to provide the level of service that we're providing in the confines of our budget, I think we're all welcome to that. Yes.
Mr. Graham?
Well, I think, you know, staying out of the forest for a moment, there is good news in this report, which is the fact that, you know, we can communicate to our writing public and other stakeholders that we have a budget gap considerably less than what we thought it was going to be. And I think that's important to say. I just want to reemphasize the fact that I think we need a broader menu of choices. And I don't, you know, and we have to have a broader menu anyway because we have a remaining budget gap even with these suggested changes. But I'm not prepared to support these particular service adjustments until I see the five or six areas that I have already mentioned, and to make a judgment as to where we want to go, and so I think we need more meetings in order to accommodate a time frame. I mean, let me ask this question: if we reach the third and the fourth week of March, and we do not have something to submit for public comment. This is a worst case, maybe, in some way.
Right.
But I just want to understand, what is the consequence of that? I mean, if we have slippage in meeting that time frame, what happens?
The consequences would be that the projected savings would be smaller than what we listed here. And you have, yes.
Is that the only consequence?
That's the only consequences I'm aware of right now.
I would say that was, you know,
they wouldn't be in place as quick.
It wouldn't be in place as quick, the reduction.
July 1, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
because you have to, if you have a public hearing, yeah. Let's assume we wait until March, you make a decision, and we have to give an announcement on the public hearing. You will not have the public hearing until April. There is a requirement of a period of time that for review that the public has to review the data. So we're talking about May. Then we need to do the service, adjust all of the services, work with the unions to do the bid because we change the whole service process.
Even in an extraordinary circumstance, you need 3 months to implement something?
Can I just make a comment? It's the cost that's associated with the service reductions that's the problem. Because if we're reducing labor, which is primarily what you'd be reducing if you do service adjustments, then that's actually an issue in terms of cost, severance pay, severance payments that we'd have to make out. And that would bleed into 2010, potentially.
So March is the latest you can have a hearing and implement it on July 1.
Implement it in June. That's what's...
So last Sunday in June. You're on the same day. It is in June. There is a requirement from our union as we get into our system-wide pick. There's a picking requirement that takes basically 6 weeks. It hangs for a week, and then they pick it. It takes 6 weeks to implement it. Once we give it to them, there's usually a week after that, so all the paperwork catches up to them. And then we have to have time to actually make the schedules, the post form. And we can't start that scheduling process until we get direction about what's in the schedules. I'm sorry. That's what it is.
So, the answer to the question, yes, it can be delayed, but there's an impact of the delay.
I think where we have come is from the starting point where we had $73 million worth of service issues that we had to look at and potential reductions, we've managed working with the staff to whittle that down to $29 million. We have before us staff, $28.8. We have staff proposals that would bring that down another $22 million that none of us is yet ready to sign on to and all of us feel very uncomfortable with. We have to come up with some mechanism to deal with the other $29 million, and it's going to take some amount of time for us to do that if it's going to be associated with either service or some of the issues that Mr. Graham has brought up. The question I guess I have is, it sounds very much as though we cannot do that by next week because there's just too much to do. And presumably we could have a special board meeting if we could do it quicker. What is it that you would like to do at this particular point? It's now coming back to us and our individual jurisdictions as to whether we want to propose specific adjustments to service, whether we want to rely upon some of the things which Mr. Graham has brought up, or whether we have some alternative proposals for closing the $29 million gap.
Question.
Mr. Zimmerman.
In terms of the schedule that we have to maintain, is the 26th the absolute last date, or is it just because that's when we have a board meeting? I mean, if we were to come in on March 5th, in 2 weeks for a meeting, would we be able to make the schedule?
Yes.
That would be my inclination, Mr. Chairman.
Other comment?
I would agree.
Okay. Anybody else? Ms. Hudgens, you look like you're about to say something.
I am. I think that's a better alternative, and I think the extra meeting isn't that painful. Maybe painful will we decide, but getting here is
the orange line function.
Orange line might function. That part. I can deal with that.
Okay, let me try a suggestion and again see where that goes. We again have $29 million. The staff has got to give to us what the distribution of their proposals, which none of us feel particularly comfortable with, would be in terms of our subsidy reductions. We need to see what we want to do in order to do the other 7.4, if those were even accepted, or what we would propose as the total amount. And all of that is subject also to looking at broader solutions such as those that Mr. Graham has proposed. How quickly can the staff give us the subsidy numbers for bus so that we know what we're looking at?
We can do that fairly quickly.
Monday. Fairly quickly is one day?
Monday. Is that
Monday.
Quick enough?
Okay.
Well, by subsidy, Mr. Chairman, you mean jurisdictional impact.
Individual
jurisdictional
impact.
Yes, that's correct.
Jurisdictional impact of what these proposals are that you have advanced.
Yes, that's correct.
And if you had $7.4 million additional that you had to cut, and you did it entirely with bus, what is that distribution, the bus distribution by jurisdiction for the remaining 7.4 million? That at least gives us a starting point. Some of that can be relieved by substituting some other change that we want to make, but it at least gives us a starting point for working. And the question before the committee is, are we willing to go back to our jurisdictions and come back on the 5th of March with proposals that are sufficiently substantive that we can live with them at the far end of it?
But, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Grant.
But we need, I need this specific information, you know, well in advance of the 5th.
Yes.
You know, so let me ask you that question. When can I get my information that I've been...
Those five items?
Right.
Actually,
it's seven because there were two that were left over.
Monday works for you.
Monday would be the subsidy allocation to prepare the package. Graham would probably be used next week sometime.
We can give this to you probably early next week on the five items that you requested, not only to you but the committee as
you
well.
Do, you do mean
right.
I mean
yeah.
all, yes, I apologize. But probably by Tuesday, the latest Wednesday, but certainly early next week. Let me just clarify. We have a couple of things we just need to look at, but probably Tuesday.
And please add in the two outstanding items from Mr. Graham on the top-level staff and the services.
Yes, we have that already prepared, so we'll include that in the package.
So then we would not discuss those as a group until the 5th, but we would have it much earlier.
Yes.
Mr. McKay?
I just want a clarification. What's coming back to the committee at his request is the dollar figures associated with those questions, not a change to any type of service reductions, proposals, or anything as a result of what could be generated from his suggestion.
That's correct. That's correct? My understanding.
Okay. I just want to make sure that it doesn't get translated into a change to the service reduction chart that we've seen.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Graham, you referenced information you had. Is that regarding parking and data? Is that information that we've all received?
Yes.
Okay.
But we could distribute it. This is
our
color map of the parking lots and when they're full.
Oh, I thought you said you had data regarding cost or something.
Oh, no, I don't have any cost data.
That's all right.
We can include the current parking utilization in the package as well, so you can take a look at that.
That would be useful. Mr. Lynn?
Since one of the requests related to parking charges, again, I think that was discussion and the data is coming back, I would like to get some information on the fair ratios and the equity issues that accompany that with the data. Make sure, I mean, at the time that we were talking about fare increases, there was a whole discussion regarding proportionality of fare increases to those who are long-distance riders and how, in fact, the parking costs factors into that. I'd like those numbers to accompany any discussions that relates to parking rates for weekends. And something we've never looked at as well is Title VI in terms of equity issues. There's always an assumption that long-distance riders are more affluent. I would assume that there are also some less wealthy long-distance riders who are under Title VI. There is some question in terms of their equity of cost of ridership. And we've never really measured that, but that is a federal review that's that should be considered as well. So I would ask that be looked at.
And I would also suggest, as you do that and you look at the whole issue of charging for parking, that you carefully consider the full cost of all trips. So it's parking plus the rail trip. And note the fact that the elasticity becomes very large on weekends and even larger when it's a large proportion of the cost of the trip. Ms. Hutchins.
I think Mr. Linton goes back to a discussion, and I thought I asked for information. But the long-distance trip is a reverse trip as well, as we perceive it. For example, the public hearing last night, the person was from the district into the outer edges of a suburb. What does that trip mean for that person versus what we generally think that they're starting at the parking lots and coming in. Actually, they're actually traveling. So the trip needs to have a full analysis as to their impacts, not just relative to our localities of where we perceive the trips began. And it's an interchange, that's what I think.
Absolutely. Mr. Graham.
Yes, and do we have any way to get a handle on how our parking lots are being used in the weekend, having nothing to do with transit? In other words, people just simply parking in our parking lots through the weekend?
Currently, we don't.
Not riding and not using the subway?
Right now, we do not know the answer to that question, because that would require for us to have staff there to do that analysis. We can do that, but there's a cost involved in doing that. We would just have to make a guesstimate of, you know, a certain percentage of people are using the system, and that's all it will be, is a guesstimate, unless we spend monies to go out.
Well, I mean,
to the
I don't
action.
Know. I'm just raising the question. Could I just raise one other question? We have a meeting scheduled for next Thursday. We have a committee meeting that morning.
Not this committee, though. Right?
Not this committee, but we're planning and development.
Right.
What is the agenda? Do we know what the agenda is for planning and development?
We have two items for that agenda.
Two action items?
Yes.
Okay. So there wouldn't be an opportunity to use that.
It should be an assumption that it should be a very brief meeting.
But I'm just wondering if there's time to go over some of this information.
You should do that.
I think you should be able to.
Yes.
So could we advance this discussion next Thursday rather than simply putting in advance until March 5th?
That's what I thought I was.
Let me try it again then. What we might do is, since most of us believe that consulting with our own jurisdictional staff is going to take more than 1 week, the answers to this series of questions that have been raised that are broader than viewing individual routes and services that are ones that we might want to see whether there are adjustments to, and I think everybody can hear that none of us wants to do that, and we're very resistant to that idea. The other issues would be discussed in a budget work session next Thursday, and then after that's done, a week later, we would reconvene to see whether we have anything that works to deal with the full $29 million. Minus anything we might have decided next Thursday.
Okay.
Is that acceptable to everybody?
Are we announcing a board meeting for March 5th?
We're announcing, I think, another budget work session or a committee meeting if you want to do it formally and take votes.
Potentially a board meeting, right? Because the board has to act to send anything out.
Yes.
Okay.
So we would want to have a
formal committee meeting and a board meeting on the 5th?
I think that's
a good announce it, and if we don't need it, we don't use it.
Yeah, we need a wise way
to announce it. Announce a board meeting for the 5th.
Okay. A board meeting and a formal committee meeting where we can take votes on this.
Just, Mr. Chairman, just one more point of clarification. I do understand what Director Linton is asking us to do. That might take us a little bit longer than Wednesday to do all the analysis on that, but I understand what he's requesting.
That's unfortunate, but that kind of analysis that we've not had and that we've made about it, kind of not driven by equity or issues related to the writers, blindly, without having that analysis.
Okay, are there any other? I'm sorry.
Let's be clear on what we're doing next Thursday. We're having planning and development meeting to do two items, which should be fairly quick. And then we are going to move directly into another finance committee discussion. Is that
that will be another budget work session.
Right. Another
and then we will have a formal finance committee on the 5th, and everybody's had time to do proper consultation, review, and consideration.
And I would suggest we go back to 9 o'clock
for next week's
planning and development.
Okay. Next week, planning and development will be at 9 o'clock. The next meeting will follow. And I would also presume that on March 5th, we will start at 9 o'clock with budget and board whenever budget or whenever
on adjournment.
Yeah, whenever finance is completed. And that meeting would be held only if we can come up with a conclusion in the committee meeting. Is that acceptable to everybody here? All right.
send out a notice.
Then I think we have completed the agenda for this. Is there anything else we need to talk about? Okay.
Yes,
let me repeat again, and I can't stress this too much. No decisions have been made. There are proposals on the table. Those proposals clearly were not received with great relish by the board. We are going to go back. We're going to discuss within each jurisdiction what may or may not be a reasonable thing to do. And I think the positive part from all of this is that we've whittled down a $73 million problem to a $29 million problem.
No, you whittled down $154 million problem.
Okay, $154 million problem. Okay, Mr. Graham has one more question before
Sunday's, in Sunday's Washington Post, there was a menu of items put out to the public which they were soliciting comment on. It didn't include any of the issues that I raised, which is troubling, because, and I hope the Washington Post, I see their representative here today, will put out a new solicitation for public comment. But I'm wondering, have we gotten, our names were all listed in the Washington Post effort to get public comment. Did we get any responses to that?
Yes, actually, I saw that article and asked to have those articles forwarded to my office. I've only seen four or five emails, and they had no, how do I want to put this, substantial recommendations other than we should not, well, the one substantial ones that was common theme was don't reduce service if you have to increase fares. And that was really the only four or five comments that we had gotten.
Well, I don't know how other members feel, but I'd like to see the comments that came out. And so if you could forward them
sure. Just
all board members.
To anyone that wants to see them, but I'd like to see them.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Unless there are any other questions, that completes this work session.